Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Reminder today that we're brought to you by Simply Safe Home Security. Protect your home the smart way without the expensive long-term contracts using Simply Safe Home Security. Visit simplysafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. And Jim, today we have crazy and crazy martinis. Folks, we promise you we're not dredging up the bottom of the internet to try and make this an all crazy week. Jim, we actually had to choose from a longer list than three of crazy topics today. It's just that kind of week.
It's not us. It's reality, people.
In fact, there might be, in reality, four martinis today because we have a little bit of a follow-up on our third martini from yesterday. We talked about the opinion piece in the New York Times from the faithless elector in Texas who says he just can't vote for Donald Trump. He read Federalist 68 and Trump would be a danger to the United States for his foreign entanglements, his lack of character and all sorts of other things, temperament. Well, Jim, our listeners are smart people. We already knew that, but yesterday proves it again. This is a comment from Ricochet with a handle Lazy Millennial, and here is the comment. I was at the Texas Republican State Convention, and it should be noted that electors are an elected position. The state delegates always divide into congressional districts and elect who will be their elector, along with their national convention delegates. Usually, multiple people want to be an elector, and they all talk about how excited they are to vote for the candidate and how they can be in Austin on the date necessary. The state convention was held after Trump had secured the nomination, but before the national convention. So there was a very small chance the national convention would have chosen someone else, but the overwhelmingly likeliest outcome was Trump being the nominee. Not only did this guy sign an oath, he probably lied to get elected by his fellow delegates, because a guy in my congressional district ran for elector under the I'll do what's necessary to stop Trump banner and got one vote, his own. So this isn't just a guy who, as I incorrectly said yesterday, was put into this position based on the primary results back in March when Cruz and other people still had a chance. This is a guy who at the state convention knew exactly what was going on, knew exactly who was most likely to be the nominee, and still is pulling this stunt.
Greg, am I wrong, or do Texans have the most staunch and ironclad view on keeping their word and honoring their oaths this side of the Klingon Empire? Right? I mean, like, that's what Texans are known, right? You know, the word is your bond. You don't go around and say, well, I'm going to do X and then do Y. Yeah, I think this guy is going to get some blowback over this one.
He is, but he's appealing to you because we talked about some of the excerpts from this New York Times opinion piece, but there's another part that I think he's directly trying to appeal to you. Here's what he says. Hamilton also reminded us that a president cannot be a demagogue. Mr. Trump urged violence against protesters at his rallies during the campaign. He speaks of retribution against his critics. He has surrounded himself with advisors such as Stephen K. Bannon, who claims to be a Leninist and lauds villains and their thirst for power, including Darth Vader. Rogue One, the latest Star Wars installment, arrives later this month. I am not taking my children to see it to celebrate evil, but to show them that light can overcome it.
Oh, okay. Well, that changes everything, doesn't it, Greg?
Oh, man.
I was opposed to you, but then you said, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, you know, this, no, sorry, pal. It doesn't change the fact that you signed on to do this. This is, you know, that internet meme. This is literally you had one job. You have one job as an elector. It's to vote for the guy. Oh, I can't do that. I've suddenly realized Trump is unacceptable. This might have dawned on you back when you were campaigning for the job.
There was another guy from Texas who came to the same conclusion, but he resigned so they could replace him with somebody who would do the job. So there's that option out there, sir. All right, let's move on to crazy, officially crazy martini number one today.
It's our bonus crazy martini.
That's right. All right, this is in the Morning Jolt today, originally from Time Magazine, which has named Donald Trump the person of the year, by the way. He's the president of the divided states of America, as Time Magazine puts it, because I'm sure that's what they would have said if Hillary won in the exact same fashion. Anyway, Mark Weston is writing this, and he says, the approximately 65 million Democrats who voted for Hillary Clinton should pledge that in the future, if a Republican wins the presidency with fewer votes than a Democrat for the third time in our era, we won't pay taxes to the federal government. No taxation without representation. Later on, if a Republican wins the election without winning the popular vote again, we should still pay what we owe in federal taxes, just not to the IRS. Instead, people would compute their federal taxes, file a Form 1040, and write a check to a national escrow account, preferably in a well-established Canadian or British bank that is beyond the reach of the U.S. Justice Department, because whoever opens this account probably will be in violation of U.S. law. In the check's memo line, people should write, quote, funds to be transferred to the IRS as soon as America resumes being a democracy, unquote. Jim, you and I weren't too happy when Barack Obama was elected and certainly not reelected. I don't remember threatening not to pay our taxes. These people, the people need some help.
Maybe we shouldn't dismiss this too hastily, Greg, because if the new rule is you don't have to pay taxes if you don't like what the president's doing, or you don't agree with an election result, I can live with that, liberals. Okay, cool, I'm in. Yeah, the other part of the also wants to say, go for it, my lefty friends. You want to see a bunch of conservatives rooting for the IRS. You want to hear about Peter? Like, yes, I've never loved these guys like this before. Because, you know, if that's the case, Greg, that all of a sudden not paying taxes, it's not a crime. It's a form of protest. I hadn't known that Wesley Snipes and Martha Stewart and Willie Nelson were all a bunch of activists, Greg. We're just taking a bold stance. If you really genuinely believe I will not pay taxes to a government that is headed up by Donald Trump, you can go and do that. You'll go to jail, but you can do that. Go right ahead. Fine. Go right ahead. But the other thing, this whining, oh, this takes extraordinary measures. We have no other choice. These guys do know you can amend the Constitution, right?
Yes. Well, I hope so.
I mean, so if this is such a terrific, go ahead and do it, guys. Go ahead. And obviously, like, well, it's too hard. We can't get the state legislatures to pass that. Now, if this really was such a terrific idea, people would be signing on for that. Most Americans are perfectly fine with that. And Trump makes the argument that, well, if this had been a national popular vote, he would have won because he would have campaigned in different areas. We don't know exactly how that alternate scenario would have shaken out. But here's the thing. Everybody knew what the rules were before this began. Hillary Clinton could have and should have known she was probably going to need Ohio. She was probably going to need North Carolina. She was probably going to need Florida. And guess what? She did campaign in all those places. Now, she kind of forgot about places like Michigan and Wisconsin and some other places she should not have neglected. But she did all that. She gave it her best shot, and she lost. And it's time for these folks to get over this. And there's kind of this whiny mentality of, look, the system did not give me what I want. Thus, the system is broken. No, some of that's on you, pal. And so I'm kind of like I'm half laughing at this, half shaking my head at the idea that all of a sudden, if the government isn't doing what you want, you get to opt out of funding it, which if that's going to be the new rules, Greg, we're going to have a wonderful, wonderful rest of our lives.
I didn't think about it that way. I was so focused on the whining. I didn't think about the fact that we could just either legitimately or pretend that we're dissatisfied with the election results or what our government's doing, and we're scot-free. Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm still pretty dissatisfied. So there you go. And on. Good news, honey. We saved money on our taxes this year.
Good news for Hillary Clinton, though. She came in second in the vote for Time Person of the Year to Donald Trump.
A lot of that going around this year.
Apparently so. On to the second crazy martini officially for the day. And, Jim, we're hearing a lot about fake news today, fake news this week with the whole Comet Ping Pong scary incident that happened over the weekend. And just fake news in general is what basically drove Americans to vote for Donald Trump, because they believed a lot of stuff that wasn't true. And that's the only reason he won. That's the narrative now. Well, if fake news is what works, then fake news is what the Daily Kos will do. They are now going forward with this cockamamie idea that Merrick Garland can still be confirmed as a Supreme Court justice, and here's how it's going to happen. On January 3rd, those who were elected to the U.S. Senate back in November will be sworn in for their six-year terms. But first, Vice President Joe Biden, who is also president of the Senate, will gavel the Senate to order, and he has the opportunity then to recognize the majority leader. But since the vast majority of people being sworn in are Republicans, until they are, there's a 34-32 advantage for Democrats plus the liberal independents like Bernie Sanders and Angus King. So therefore, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer would make the motion for Merrick Garland's nomination to be considered. Joe Biden could rule it in order, and therefore, by a majority of those 66 senators who are actually sworn in at that time, Merrick Garland's on the Supreme Court. Checkmate, baby! Except for the fact that you really can't do that for a variety of reasons. But, Jim, what do you make of this latest effort?
it really does seem nonsensical. It isn't likely to hold up even to the lightest scrutiny, because under this thinking, Greg, that there is some sort of magical tiny period in between Senates where the Senate has less than 100 members. I don't see any of that in the Constitution, right? And during this sort of like leap year type scenario or daylight savings time where you turn back the membership of the Senate from 100 to 60 some, during this period, they can actually this time period, which nothing's ever gotten done. It's apparently perfectly legal for them to get stuff done, and not just legal to get stuff done, get enormously consequential things done. Now, somebody pointed out that technically there's nothing in this Constitution that says there should be only 9 Supreme Court justices. So if you really wanted to say, okay, we're going to blow up all established rules, we're going to blow up precedent, we're going to blow up the election results, we're going to do what we want, screw the rules, to hell with all this, we're, you know, the only thing that matters is us getting power and getting what we want. You know, we can go back to the FDR court packing real easy. Right? We can give, you know, Donald Trump 10 Supreme Court nominations if that's how they want to play this, if they want to shake this out. Or we could pay attention to the Constitution and say that there is no mini period of a mini Senate or something like that. There is no half hour of Democratic anarchy hour or whatever you want to call it. Wasn't there some like Star Trek episode where everything happened at 1 hour or something like that? Where's Jonah when I need him? But anyway, this seems like it's a crazy cockamamie idea. They do not want to open up this door. Because that'll end up with the not just like if limiting the filibuster was the nuclear option, Greg, this is the thermonuclear option. This is, you know, we're going to ignore all precedent, all rules and everything else just to get what we want. And believe me, what happens once the Republicans have that Senate majority, guys? We will steamroll you. We talked in the last segment about constitutional amendments. Republicans are like one state legislature away from having enough control of enough state legislatures to enact constitutional amendments. If they want to open this door and play this game, we can play it, and it's going to turn out very badly for them. So thankfully, this is just some Daily Coast guy who has no familiarity with Senate procedure trying to make this talk this up. I don't think Senate Democrats would be dumb enough to go into this. I'd love to see Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Manchin and those other red state Democrats up in 2018 give their view on, hey, how do you feel about shoving a Supreme Court justice down the country's throat when there's less than 100 senators? How's that sound? So.
Yeah, not likely to happen, but it's good to see that the Daily Coast is taking this well.
I've forgotten about them, so, you know, good for you, Marcos.
Their other banner headline today was that until Trump gets rid of Bannon, the Senate Democrats should block all of Trump's cabinet appointees. A, it's a non sequitur. B, you can't because you got rid of the filibuster.
They can't count.
Well, math is hard sometimes. Math is hard. But if you're worried about how secure the U.S. Senate will be on January 3rd for a brief period of time, fear not. The rules are in place and it would be very difficult to do anything about it. The Senate should be in good shape. But what about your house? Are you traveling for the holidays? Are you having family over? Maybe a quiet day in? However you plan to celebrate, please take our advice. Protect your family and your home first. Right now, our friends at Simply Safe Home Security are having a massive holiday sale. Take $200 off the Simply Safe Defender Security Package. Quite simply, it's Simply Safe's biggest deal ever.
You must check out this alarm system. It has everything to protect your home. 17 high-tech wireless sensors, police dispatch, alarm monitoring, a blaring siren, a panic button. And this award-winning around-the-clock protection is just $15 a month, 3 times less than the other guys. There's no long-term contract, no installation cost, and no hidden fees.
What is not to like about that? Around the holidays, there's always a rise in burglaries. Make sure your home stays safe. Save $200 right now at simplysafe.com/ricochet. That's SIMPLISAFE.com/ricochet. One more time, simplysafe.com/ricochet. For $200 off. All right, on to our final crazy martini now, Jim. And yesterday was apparently Barack Obama's final major national security speech as president. Before he took to the stage, you could almost see the tears filling the eyes of the cable news anchors on CNN and MSNBC. This is another one of the last of the Obama administration. He was at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, Florida, talking, of course, about what a wonderful job he's done as commander-in-chief. And here's the line that has a lot of people scratching their heads today.
We should take great pride in the progress that we've made over the last 8 years. That's the bottom line. No foreign terrorist organization has successfully planned and executed an attack on our homeland.
No foreign terrorist organization has successfully planned or executed an attack on our homeland. Fort Hood, Boston, Chattanooga, San Bernardino, Orlando, Garland, Ohio State, other ones as well here. Jim, I guess if you throw enough words into your sentence, you can make your statement technically correct, but I don't think this kind of bragging is doing him any favors.
Yeah, you hang a lot on the word organization or, you know, no terrorists or, you know, no one with a hierarchy and middle management and a large. Okay, fine. Great. I don't want to belabor the obvious. I think your list was pretty good there. We could throw in the Chelsea bombing, the stabbing attack on Minnesota, just not too long ago, Ohio State University, right? I mean, you know, we've had, sad to say, a decent number of terrorist attacks, and some of them have had, thankfully, none of them quite on the scale of 9/11. But, you know, the Boston Marathon bombing was pretty darn horrifying. You know, 264 people got injured. When the bomb goes off, the people fleeing the shrapnel aren't going to say, well, thank goodness this wasn't an organization who did this and just a lone wolf who's bombing me right now. You know, yes, we should give credit to everybody involved in the counterterrorism effort. I think the president can point to a certain number of successes on his watch, probably most notably the bin Laden raid. But look, yes, it's good that they've disrupted a lot of plots. The problem is if lone wolves or small groups or couples like the San Bernardino one end up committing attacks like this, Americans feel every bit as unsafe. And yes, I realize stopping lone wolf attacks is very, very difficult. It's also very, very important. And it's kind of infuriating to see the president kind of look at this and say, well, as long as you define it the right way, we've been remarkably successful, instead of acknowledging the problems and instead of looking at this clear thinking. Terrorism is an issue you cannot spin. You cannot say, well, you know, I keep seeing people say, well, look, your chances of dying in a terror attack are very small. Correct. But that still doesn't mean that when 3,000 people get killed, we shouldn't be, to maximum response there. I keep seeing people, the number of Americans who have been killed by terrorist attacks is so small. Do you know how often when they usually begin those studies, Greg?
After
September 12th, 2001.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's just extend it back one day and see if the average goes up any there. So, you know, it just seems to be such transparent manipulation and redefining of, well, we've eliminated core al-Qaeda or core ISIS or organized ISIS and all these different groups. We're not doing as well with diet al-Qaeda and, you know, contingent, you know, adjunct al-Qaeda and ISIS. Look, ultimately, they're all united in their desire to kill us. And I just can't, you know. I think it seems fitting that Obama would go out on this note when for the last 8 years his view on counterterrorism has been about defining it so precisely that it looks like he's doing a much better job than he actually is.
It just reminds me of that speech he gave after San Bernardino. Everybody just calm down. America's not going anywhere. It's not an existential threat. But he did say what is causing terrorism yesterday. Jim, you'll be excited to know this. It's basically global warming and the Second Amendment. Quote, a changing climate is increasing competition for food and water. He was specifically referring to Syria and other Muslim-majority and conflict-ridden states. And then when it came to the Second Amendment, he said somebody who is trying to kill and willing to be killed is dangerous, particularly when we live in a country where it's very easy for that person to buy a very powerful weapon. So if we could just fix the climate and get rid of guns, everything would be fine.
It's like a magic eight ball that's broken and keeps coming up the same answer. What is causing this? Global warming. Why did I stub my toe this morning? Oh, global warming. Why was my cereal soggy? Oh, it's global warming. Is there anything it can't do?
I guess not. Jim, at any point in the 8 years, have you heard him talk about actually winning the war on terrorism instead of ending wars?
Containing, degrading. It's kind of like I was going to go with a very obvious Bill Clinton joke, but Bill Clinton used to talk about the importance of degrading our terrorist threats. And I was like, if anybody knows about things that are degrading, it's Bill Clinton.
Well, I was just thinking of the contrast today because there are a couple of videos out, including one from National Review, which showed a clip from, I believe, 75 years ago tomorrow. See if you can pick up a slightly different approach to the war.
No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
Absolute victory. We railed on FDR yesterday, but he was dead right there.
It's a makeup call, President Roosevelt.
And on that note, for those who are still with us from Pearl Harbor and the families of those who are gone now, we thank you immensely for your service, and we certainly remember that service on this day in particular. Jim, as always, good to be with you, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and a reminder that we're brought to you today by Simply Safe Home Security. Visit simplysafe.com/ricochet to get $200 off your new home security system. SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. And join us Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.